Hi everyone, welcome to the timingresearch.com crowd forecast news, episode number 284 for December 14th, 2020. We are recording this live at 1 p.m. Eastern time. My name is David Kosmeter. I'm the creator of timingresearch.com, and you are seeing my screen right now, and I'm going to show charts for what we're talking about today. And so today I have arranged for Simon Klein and Sam Borgi to join us, as well as Jim, the option professor, and he will be moderating today. So I'm going to go ahead and turn it over to him.
Okay, great. And what a day. We opened way up and then we faded a little bit here. So it'll be interesting to see what you guys are thinking as we go into the last 2 weeks of the year. Starting out with Simon Klein, just a quick background, Simon, so the people who aren't familiar with you know a little bit more about you, please. Hello?
Hey, Simon, you're muted.
Okay, we're good. Hi, everyone. So I've been trading for over 15 years now, and I started my professional life at Credit Suisse in London and then in New York. And I started TradeSmart, which is a trading education business, which help people to learn how to trade successfully by teaching them how to read the market professionally and how to run a successful trading business. And that includes how to develop your own trading plan, which and strategies which fit your personality and lifestyle. What many of you may find is that you can't seem to copy someone else or some other guru out there. It doesn't seem to work for you. So really what you need to do in trading to be successful is find your own way. You need to learn from people, but don't follow people. Okay, that's what I would say. So I've been training people for probably over 10 years now and coaching people, over 10 years. And it's wonderful to see people change their lives. And I've had quite a number of traders over the years who have become successful, and I work with them one-on-one. We have a live trading room every day, and I just got a message from, we called a trade today live on the pound on the short side, and one of my traders in the room, Leanne, took the trade, and she sent me back a message saying she made 11.8R on the trade, $589, which was great. And she took the trade. It was in her trading plan as well, and it's wonderful to see people taking those steps and actually starting to make consistent profits in the market. So that's a really wonderful thing. And over the years, we've had many people that have gone on to really become outstanding traders, some of them even out trading me, which is amazing. So so if you're looking for a place to learn how to read the market professionally without any indicators, we're price action traders alone based on the candlesticks. And then we'll teach you how to run a successful trading business, as we said, and that's the whole framework you need and the process you need to go through. Then you can develop yourself as a trader within that framework. That's what Okay.
Yeah, the concept of pack your own parachute has been around for a long time, and it's been around a long time because it's a valid concept. Eh? So let's talk about Sam Borgi. And Sam, what do you got going on down there? A little background on yourself, please.
Hey guys, so my name is Sam. I'm a markets editor with TradingGods.net. And Trading Gods, we really started over 5 years ago teaching traders how to access the volatility market. So the VIX, VIX options, VIX futures, the VIX ETNs. We've since gotten back also focusing on the stock market, the FANG stocks, as well as just teaching traders how to sell weekly options for steady profit. So our goal is just, be an educational program for anybody who wants to utilize volatility and trade volatility alongside their more traditional portfolio.
Sure. Okay. Well, we'll get into more specifics on that later in the broadcast, but let's start out with the questions we generally hit everyone with on Monday mornings, because you're so bright-eyed at this point. Let's say we've got the S&P 500 and we opened at 3675. Where do you think it will be closing on Friday? And we'll have to ask Karnak and Swami this, but we'll start out with Simon Klein. What do you think is going to happen between now and Friday?
Okay. I think we might end up being flat, kind of trading in this kind of range. Mm-hmm. And we're still bullish on the bigger time frames. I'm looking at the E-minis actually in my own charts, which is our view on the S&P 500.
Right.
And I'm seeing, today we had a gap up and it ran up, and then we kind of sold off from, I think it was around 10 o'clock when market reversed and kind of just closed the gap now.
Yeah. So your feeling is kind of sideways.
I'm kind of... We're still in a bullish market on the monthly, weekly, and daily chart. By tomorrow, it'll be interesting if we're looking at the pivots. By tomorrow, we'll have maybe a lower high on the daily, which means we may have a move to the downside that will break the kind of daily uptrend. So we may pull back down. If I'm looking at the E-minis here, I don't know if you want to pull up the E-minis, David.
He's got the S&P up there with quite a number of red bars right now.
Yeah, this is on the 15-minute chart. Is it possible to pull up the E-minis on the weekly chart or daily chart, maybe?
Well, is he Well, he's trying to get that for you. What's your confidence level, Simon?
Confidence, I would say that we're going to probably, I think we're probably going to end up moving to the downside. I'll know more tomorrow.
Right.
If tomorrow we close down and we fail to go above today's highs, then we're going to pull back. And if I'm looking at the E-minis here, we'll probably pull that down to 3,600 area.
Which is a pretty good size drop. A pretty good size drop from here, yeah?
Not that big, but
I mean, not on a percentage basis, but you know, per contract, 70 points is not a bad thing to catch.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, we could pull back to 3,500 as well and still be bullish on the monthly chart. So the market's still bullish until proven otherwise. And,
right.
And again, we were at all-time highs last week. We made new highs, and there's no reason really from a chart perspective to be bearish until the trend's broken. So I would imagine, you know, at the moment it's 50-50, and we could, depends how we close today and tomorrow. We'll know more tomorrow. If we close down, as I said before, we're probably going to pull back. And again, that would mean the daily chart's no longer in an uptrend, but the weekly and the monthly are still.
Some people were thinking that 3,700, 3,675 was kind of a support zone, and it got broke last week, and now we've rallied back into that zone, and we seem to be failing. Do you see any significance to the range of 3,700, 3,675 on the S&P?
Put up my S&P chart.
Because it did seem those numbers were pretty good, and they're working at some resistance here today.
I'm just going to look at the E-minutes, what I'm more familiar with. Yeah, it looks pretty much the same on the daily now. Okay, good. So basically, if we go down below, I'll tell you what the exact price is, 3592 on the E-minis, 3592.25, spot 25, yeah? Then that would break the uptrend. So we moved off from demand today and we actually gapped up, which was a bullish gap initially, but then we kind of started moving down as we got close to the highs and the market just filled the gap. If we get supported here, we could have another run to the upside again.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, it is a significant level from a demand perspective. It's a level of demand on the chart and the demand level goes from around that number that I just said. I'm looking at, again, this is the E-minis, from 3592 spot 25 up to kind of around 3650. So it's a zone.
Yeah.
And again, a move below the zone means we're going down.
Well, what's some of the reasonings behind why we would sell off and why we would advance?
I'm purely chart-based. I don't care so much the reason why. I'm really trading what's happening.
All of the money.
There's always a different reason why. Today, you know, it could be the pandemic and elections, and yesterday it was a tsunami, and you know, the charts move the way the charts move. If you can read what's happening in the charts,
right,
and understand what's going on, it doesn't matter why.
Right.
And I'll tell you a story about that. When I first started trading, we were kind of part fundamental, part technical. So we used to do a lot of research about, we were in the office about 6:30 in the morning, or the 9:30, I was trading US equities. And the trading floor were there 3 hours before. And we used to go through all the earnings reports and, you know, look at balance sheets and upgrades, downgrades. And we used to get a news feed that used to give us the news before it hit everything else. And the problem was sometimes the good news came out and the market went down, and sometimes it went up, and likewise the other way around, what you thought was good news and the market responded differently. So what I decided over time, and a lot of my trading friends as well, kind of the same approach, we used to be focused a little bit on the fundamentals at the beginning. We used to spend a lot of time on them, but we found that over time, especially for short-term trading, it doesn't seem to make any difference. Sometimes you get bullish news and the market sells off, and sometimes bearish news and the market rallies, and likewise the other way around.
Right.
So what I decided to do is, instead of trying to understand all that, saves a lot of time as well, just focus on what is happening right now.
Do you look at anything like a positioning? You know, in other words, some of the quantitative guys like Tom Lee and Kalanovic over at JP Morgan, they kind of look at many factors, but one of the factors is positioning. And obviously if everyone's selling like they were in March and April and May, you know, that would indicate that the other way makes some sense. And I was wondering if the way everyone has been very, very bullish now and positive, if positioning has shifted the other way.
The charts will tell us that. And when we picked the market top in, was in March, yeah, before the market crashed. And then we picked the market bottom as well and rode it all the way back up again. And if you know how to read the market, you know where the levels are of supply and demand, and you know how to understand when the trend changes. So if you're high up and the uptrend changes, it's no longer an uptrend, for example, and you're at all-time highs, that's a kind of a warning sign that maybe we're going to move down. And very much the same if you look at, and if you want to pull up a chart of Bitcoin futures, which was kind of interesting. Bitcoin futures futures and look at it on the daily chart. Bitcoin futures, perfect. Do you want to look at regular candlesticks? As opposed to how, these are how Kanashi it looks like, just candles, that's the effect. So if you look at the top there of the market, you see, if you go back to last week, we failed to make a new high, yeah? Which is, if you go back, the red candles, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. 6 red candles back would get you to the beginning of last week. So we're at all-time highs, and this is a less mature market. So whereas, I'd say something very interesting. Usually, if we saw the market moves to the downside, what the E-minis and the NASDAQ and more mature markets, what they seem to do if they want to go down is rally and break the highs and then sell off. This market is a less mature market. And this one gets to the high and it does it beautifully and it breaks the uptrend. That red bar broke the uptrend and then we had a pullback to the downside. Now we did gap up since it's a very bullish market at the moment. And we gapped up today right into supply. So the market's kind of gone sideways for two reasons. Number one, you know, it's a bullish gap. So it wants to try and go to the upside. But guess what? We're in supply, so it can't go up. But it's bullish, so it can't go down. So it stays sideways. If you look at the price, if you look at the price action today, if you flip it to an hourly chart, you'll see we're sideways action. So that's another very interesting thing to understand. When a market's going to go sideways, understand that ahead of time so you know how to trade it. So you're not expecting this to have a big move today either way, at least not yet. Yeah. It's not filling the gap and going down, and it's not going up either. It's a very bullish gap, but it landed in supply. So understanding where the levels are. So here you can see the top. So last week we're on the short side, and you see we had a move down because we're at all-time highs and the daily uptrend broke. Whereas if you go back to the daily chart again, you see the gap down. It didn't gap down. It ran down hard into a demand level and then ran back and then gapped up. You see the big red bar down at the top and then the green bar running to the highs. See that? The two bars. There's two biggest bars on this chart.
Yeah, they are.
The highs. Yeah, the big bar
next,
down.
Next to each other too.
Next to each other, yeah. So you see the one ran down and it ran down right into a demand level. We've seen the E-minis and the NASDAQ do this as well. Big red bar down and then the next day it runs. But this one gapped up and ran up. It was a bullish gap and ran up. But when we fail to make the highs, that's where we get a move down. So the reasoning why, I'm just trying to explain. So when I see that, I'm thinking sell. I don't care what's going on in the world of Bitcoin.
Yeah. No, you're technically oriented and you're using the technicals only, which obviously is important because you're investing in the price, not the newspaper.
Exactly. And from a technical perspective, the price is king. The price tells you everything you need to know.
No doubt.
Why? Who cares?
Well, let's swing over to Sam and get a little feedback from Sam. Sam, where did you think it's going to be between now and Friday on that S&P? And do you have a confidence level, anything like that?
Sure. Well, I mean, as Simon indicated, we are in a bullish uptrend until proven otherwise. So looking at it, I'm no Nostradamus. I see where the market is, and I see a lot of the excitement around the COVID vaccine and the relief that's bringing. At a macro level, I do see the market headed higher over the short to medium term. It becomes harder to gauge on a weekly basis, but if I had to give a guess, I would say that the market will finish the week higher, maybe closer to 3,700. I don't think it's going to go back to all-time highs quite this week, but if I had to rate my confidence in that, I would say probably around 60%.
And are you thinking of it strictly from technicals, or are you thinking of things like shutdowns or virus spikes or other factors?
Exactly. I look a lot at the fundamentals. It seems like, Simon has it down on the technicals. I look more on the fundamental and the macro side, and I see the inflows coming in through, what's going on with the central bank, and I see a lot of the just bullish sentiment around the holiday season and then the fact that we are in generally a seasonal uptrend in stocks, and I haven't seen anything to the contrary at a macro level. So with all that being said, and I'm not going to get fancy with my, outlook, and I would say that I do think it's going to go higher.
Yeah. And like I say, there's no evidence of a big turn here at this time anyway. With regards to some of the markets that you're trading, Simon, and techniques that you're using and things like that, time frames you're working with, can you give some generalities to some of the things you're following as far as what instruments do you use and what time frames you tend to trade and that kind of thing?
Sure. I've changed over the years. I was a very kind of very short-term trader when I first started out, much of a scalper, actually, maybe breakout trader. But over the years, I've kind of mellowed out a bit, and I like trading. My favorite time frame to trade is the daily chart with 1 hour entries. So I like to trade the daily chart and use the 1 hour to actually enter ideas on the daily chart. That's more of like kind of a swing trading idea. Also like the long-term time frames as well. Some nice trades in gold over the years on the long side. And on an intraday basis, I like trading the hourly chart using the 5 minute or 15 minute to actually enter. So we use kind of multiple time frame analysis analysis. So we did that today on the pound. If you want to ping the pound up, let me show you that. You bring the pound up, GBP.
Yeah, the pound had GBP a bit of a rally today, and did you fade the rally is what you did?
I actually shorted the top. When it turned, we actually shorted it and took all the way back down. And again, during the London session, you could have taken it all the way up, and then US session all the way back down. It may go back up again. So if you put it up on the, on the hourly charts, the best way to look at it.
Yeah, that 134 area was kind of a rough place for it, right?
Yeah, so we shorted it at 130. We shorted at 134. Pretty much spot on, a bit over 134.0, and I'll tell you exactly the price I got. About 134.06, I shorted it, and we took it all the way back down, basically. Actually, the first target area was 133.50. So it was like a 50 pip drop, around 55 pip, something like that. And how do we get, so this is kind of one of the techniques I use intraday. The move up landed us in a supply zone, and then something what I call price direction changed on that second red bar to the downside. So the question is, where did it come from? And that's probably where it's going back to. And that's exactly what happened. The move came all the way back down to where it rallied from this morning. And again, the rally this morning, it gapped up, and it was a gap and run. So once you understand how gaps work, we caught everyone to the left and down, those big bars, and sending off down on the wrong side. So that's why gaps generally work, when you catch people on the wrong side. There's a gap risk, a weekend gap risk in the Forex market, primarily. There's a gap risk in the stock market every single day, if you hold things overnight. So what can happen over here is that, if you hold it overnight and then you suddenly find yourself 100 points down because it gaps against you, and say you had a stop in, you're going to get filled with slippage. You're going to, say you were risking, just as a crude example here, say you were risking 20 pips. And the thing, like in this case, gapped up 100. So you can end up losing five times. So you're risking 1%, you're kind of losing 5% on that trade.
So that's one of the reasons you've honed in on the daily graphs using the hourlies, because you think that overnight risk for many traders is not worth it.
It's more prevalent on the weekend because the Forex market is a 24/6 market. So there's no gaps generally intraday or from the open on Sunday night,
right,
or Monday morning till Friday afternoon, evening. Because the market's continuously trading, there's no real gap. Gaps usually happen when there's a buildup of orders on the buy or sell side and the market opens, and it has to open in an area where you're going to fill the other side of those trades. So if there's too much on the buy side, no one on the sell side, the market will gap up, and likewise the other way around.
Yeah. So, and then once that order imbalance is resolved, there's no volume to support it in that direction.
Yeah. So you'll find many times, if you're a market maker or a specialist on the New York Stock Exchange, then imagine, the specialists and the market makers are buyers and sellers of last resort. So if there's a massive order on the buy side, or everyone in the world wants to buy, but there's no one on the sell side, who's going to have to sell? Specialists and market makers, they have to make the market. Yeah. So what they're going to do is going to sell at a price where they're going to be profitable. So they'll gap the price up and they'll say, okay, I'm willing to sell at this price. Everyone wants to buy at market at the open. So the specialist has a right to open up the market within reason, where they can, there's no, either at a level where there's other sell orders there, the supply level in the market. And once those are, those orders are filled, then, and there's still more orders on the buy side, the specialist has to take the other side of the trade. So you might find many times that if the market gaps up, not all gaps, but if the market gaps up, it might sell off immediately afterwards. And as it's dropping down, those specialists and market makers may be taking the other side, maybe offsetting their initial trade on the short side by buying back as it drops down. So they'll put their orders underneath the market as it drops down, and then it will do whatever it does afterwards, and they're profitable.
Yeah, a lot of people I talk to are kind of positive on the British pound because they think obviously there'll be resolution, and of course we'll come out of the virus, and the Brits will do quite a bit better. You don't have any longer term view on it, do you?
It's been quite bullish. We've been quite bullish on the monthly chart from around May this year. May this year we were pretty bullish, and we had people in our trading room that picked up the pound around 122 and rode it all the way up to 1.3, which is quite a nice ride. And obviously buying, this is more of a longer term trade, buying on pullbacks. Usually the trade was coming from this time from the monthly and the weekly chart, and pullbacks on the daily and the hourly chart were used to get in to add to the position. And basically target area was 1.3 at the beginning. I thought maybe it would continue up to 1.4, maybe 1.5 where it was pre-Brexit. But, the market pulled back in September. We had a down month, and then we held, and then 3 months we've been, 1 month kind of sideways, and then last month up, and now we're kind of deciding which way to go.
Yeah.
The daily chart's looking like it kind of, today it ran right up into supply on the daily chart. If you look at the way the pivots are forming there, got lower lows on highs, we just ran up into a lower high and sold off, which is what the trade was today. And we also coming down from a weekly supply area. But I think we're still bullish on the monthly chart. And there's potential for the pound, as I said before, to if it continues higher, which it may do, to get back to 1.4, 1.5, which are the pre-Brexit. It ran up to 1.5 and then sold off. It was a big sell-off. And we may get back there again.
Yeah. Outside of the currency, is there any other markets you tend to trade? I mean,
I look at the futures markets, gold, oil, E-minis, NASDAQ, Bitcoin, and also follow stocks as well, more of a long term.
So you have a little bit of a diversified wide net.
Different
types of capital.
I trade in the longer term. I trade medium term and also short term. So right. Different accounts for different things.
Exactly. Different money, different purposes.
So I could be, you know, in a long term trade on the pound, for example, and I could also play it short today, for example. You know, I could still be in a long term position.
Right. Sam, with regards to some of the stuff that you were talking about, the VIX and trading the VIX in all its forms, I guess there's that 3x leverage one that they've got. Is that Direxion or one of those guys?
We trade, you know, VIX and VIX inverse products on a regular basis. We usually have, you know, pretty short holding periods. You know, you don't want to be in that market for too long, but we've been bearish on the VIX over the past month or so as equities have rallied and as volatility has declined right back to around the historical average. So we've had some bearish calls on the VXX, and we've also been, you know, long on the SEXY, which is an inverse product to the VIX, and it trades in the same direction as stocks. So that's usually the winning trade in the volatility market over time. So that's another way in which you can access the volatility market is through, you know, going the opposite direction of where volatility is or where you think it's going to head.
Yeah, the VIX seems to be having a difficult time getting under 20.
Yeah.
And it seems like if it gets above 25, school could get let out on the upside a little bit. Do you see that as a parameters? You know, above 25, you better get prepared for a higher VIX, and then under 20, we're probably looking at 3,800 on the S&P.
Yeah, you know, you're definitely right on that. I mean, I've been really surprised. Let me backtrack. I haven't been surprised, but the fact that the S&P has been at record highs and the VIX has been above 20, that is usually not a very normal state. Typically, when stocks are at record highs, the VIX is, you know, well below the historical average. And we saw that throughout the Trump administration in 2017 and 2018, where equities were flying and the VIX was almost down to single digits at one point. But now with the broader macro picture and the issues with the virus and with monetary policy, we're seeing that equities have rallied, but the VIX remains, you know, much higher than it normally would at record highs. So yeah, anything above 25 under normal circumstances would be a huge warning sign. But it just seems like the market may have recalibrated to a new normal, at least for the time being. That's kind of what it seems like to me.
Yeah, maybe the market's nervous that the enthusiasm about the vaccine is premature and the return to normal is premature, and other factors that are kind of, you know, happy days are here again might be playing a little early here.
I think so too. I mean, we saw some, you know, large upticks in the November futures contract, you know, ahead of the election. The election volatility didn't happen as badly as some people were fearing, but overall there's a lot of question marks around the economy, around COVID, around now another wave of shutdowns that are happening. So all of that I think is related to where the VIX is now.
Yeah, I think the market would have been more nervous if we had an election on the Fed chairman than they would on the president.
I think so too.
A couple of the strategies you're talking about have to deal with selling the weekly options, and when you sell weekly options on the S&P, let's say, on the E-minis, what kind of chart would you use? Would you use the 15-minute, the 30-minute, or daily? Or what, you know, which chart would you kind of be interested in the most?
We usually follow the daily, although, I mean, you know, smaller time frames may also be useful. But we typically, given our holding periods, you know, anything between 15 and 30 days, we're looking usually at, you know, daily charts.
And say we're looking at something like a two-week chart on the S&P, and I see the high's been 37.10 and the low's been 36.30. So in the last 10 trading days, that's been your parameters. Do you kind of use those points as strike price points? You know, let the market establish parameters and then play with the parameters that the market has told us?
Yeah, exactly. And that's kind of reaffirms our bullish stance on where the market is headed. And we've seen these parameters, you know, get recalibrated recalibrated a few times or several times now since the March flash crash. And, you know, even if we remove that, we see that the market has been in an uptrend. And I just don't see any reason why that would change based on, you know, how the market has behaved and, you know, how these parameters have been set. So there is a lot of volatility, you know, much more than you'd expect in a bull market. But the picture keeps telling us that we're, you know, overall in an uptrend. Whether the, you know, macro backdrop supports a healthy rally over the long term, I personally don't believe so. When you look at, you know, debt levels and you take a look at what the Federal Reserve is doing and the market is being propped up by Fed intervention and by tech stocks. I mean, I have my own views on the health of the stock market rally and the health of the economy, but, you know, the charts, you know, let us know that in the short term, there's really no need to be a contrarian on this.
Right. And so you're leaning more towards the put strategies?
Yes. Yes, exactly.
And do you ever do the strangles where you try to play both sides, or you think this market is too possibly, you know, lineal to the upside or whatever?
Right now I see lineal, but you know, that's definitely something to consider, you know, the strangle strategy moving forward as volatility continues to pull, you know, market sentiment in different directions.
Now, obviously, if you do, are you doing mostly writing strategies, correct, or buying?
Yes.
Writing.
Yeah.
So while you're writing them, are you generally using spreads?
We do use spreads. Yes. Yeah.
So credit spreads, that kind of thing?
Exactly. Yeah. We're looking at, that's mainly our, you know, one of our main strategies.
And with regards to exit strategies, you know, some people like to let them go all the way to zero. Some people believe once you get 80% of what you can make, you should cover and find a new deal. How do you feel about that?
Yeah, absolutely. It's all about covering because, you know, we employ a pretty rigid risk management strategy. You know, we're not looking to, you know, always make huge gains on every single trade.
Right.
You know, we like to teach slow and incremental over time. If you target a slow, steady growth over time, I think your portfolio will thank you over the long term.
Yeah. And so the exit strategy may not be let them go to zero, because obviously once a option premium gets down close to zero, your maximum potential is now very small and you're still taking risk. So some people would say that doesn't make much sense, you know, to be in a market where your risk is, you know, still the same and your return is down to peanuts because it already shrunk, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Quit while you're ahead in that case, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's just, it's what a cost benefit analysis makes
exactly.
No sense. What kind of parameters, like some people, if it hits your strike, they'll either cover or roll the position. You know, what on exit strategies when it's, shall we say, running for cover because the market is doing something unforeseen. What are some of your general techniques on exiting things that aren't working very well? Do you like to roll them? You like to cut them off, or you'd make a decision on the case?
We cut them off in that case. I mean, like as we teach in our program, not every trade that we take is going to be a winner, and we have to set our expectations. We believe that if you just employ a rigid, you know, risk management strategy, you know, downside is going to be limited in that case, and that allows us to overall, you know, continue to move in the plus side when it comes to portfolio management and how we perform over time.
And the liquidity on the options, much better on the E-mini than the NASDAQ, right?
Oh, absolutely.
Because when you're doing a spread, you got to buy one at the ask and sell one on the bid. And if you get into an illiquid market, that's a very rough racket, right?
Yeah. We like to focus mostly on, you know, the highly liquid markets. That's what we stress in our, you know, VIX Trader program and in our retirement day trader program is to really focus on these highly liquid markets. And VIX is part of that as well.
Sure. Simon, do you use much of the options in conjunction to what you're doing, or are you pretty directional on what you're doing?
I'm directional.
Yeah. And I tell you what, as we go into the last 20 minutes here, let's talk a little bit about two things that I guess many people listening would probably want to know about. And that is, I'll start out with Simon. What's your opinion on how things will work between now and the end of the year, meaning the next 2 weeks? And how do you think 2021 will shape up? And I'd like to go over different sectors. We'll start out with the stock market. How do you think the stock market will do in the next 2 weeks? And how do you think it'll do in 2021? You have any targets on the S&P? Or?
Again, I'm looking at the E-minis. It depends what happens today, tomorrow. We could take out the new highs or we could pull back. Those are the two options, obviously. Yeah. And again, I'll wait for the market to let me know which one of them is going to do. So at the moment, it's looking like it could actually, you know, even if we close today the way we do, we could have a rally tomorrow that takes out the highs. I think because of the sell-off, if I look at the E-minis, a massive sell-off we had, and we had a pullback to the top of that sell-off. So we may get, you know, from a technical perspective, we may get a push to the upside in kind of a similar size to that move down to the upside. We already started with a big bar up in November, so we could continue moving up, like almost like a measured move.
Mm-hmm. Because we made new our highs in December than we did in November, correct? correct?
I'm looking at the E-minis. The E-minis made new highs in November.
December we pushed higher.
Yeah. December we pushed higher. Yeah.
So it's made new monthly highs.
Correct. And in that structure, if I just look at the monthly chart on the E-minis, it's more likely to go up than down.
Yeah. Until it stops making new highs, obviously, you don't have to be from Harvard to figure that one out. Huh?
Yeah. Yeah. And, it reminds me of my early days as a trader when I used to try, and pick the highs before I knew how to do it. Yeah. Right. And you think we used to sell these kind of climactic moves to the upside. We used to start piecing in as it was running up in a big way. And then I decided, as I kind of matured as a trader, instead of trying to get out, how about buying it and taking it up and then flipping it and taking it down rather than, getting in too soon on the short side when it's still rallying. Because when you try and do that, you usually get another burst to the upside, which kind of traps all the people out on the wrong side.
Right.
And you have to get out because it's gone too far against you or you're at your maximum risk on it.
Right.
So I think that could happen. When you think a market can't go higher, and that's when it usually goes higher.
Mm-hmm. So you think it'll be kind of binary in the next 2 weeks in that you'll either be taking out the highs and going that way or some type of a correction may occur.
It's either, or we could end up going sideways in this range between 3,600, 3,700. We could just carry flat out at the end of the year and just do nothing.
Yeah, that makes sense. How about 2021? Are you looking, the ranges that people talk about is anywhere between 3,800 and 4,500 S&P?
I could see that. If you look at the range from the bottom, it went from 22, I'm looking at the E-minis again, 2250 up to say 3250. So that's like 1,000, yeah? So we could go up 3250 up to 4250. So I think that might be a nice target if we're talking about a measured move to the upside, we could make it up to 4250.
Right. And
a rough guide of what it could do. Now, I'm not saying it's going to do that. I don't know what it's going to do. No one knows.
Yeah? Nobody knows. No.
But if you have an idea, and it starts to move, then if you're on the long side where you could possibly take your targets, especially when it's hitting new highs. Until, of course, the trend changes or some other smaller time frames may get you out.
One of the keys as we go into the new year is people are saying, will the rose colored glasses come out? Because you're going to get negative information coming in December and January and maybe February because of obviously the continuing virus problem. But people are looking through all that into this nirvana that's coming down the road. And is it possible they take off some of their rose colored glasses and maybe recalibrate the prices a bit? Valuation, maybe valuations compress at all? Is that possible with higher yields?
I'm not sure. I mean, we'll have to see how the market wants to play out. I mean, usually the way I'm looking at the market is kind of an if-then-else. If the market does this, then this is likely to happen. Else, if the market does this, then something else is likely to happen. And I wait for the market to do one of those, and then I know what I'm doing. That makes sense.
Right.
So I don't know what it's going to do until it does, but then I know if the market does one of those things, I know what the probabilities are. Again, an emphasis on the word probabilities, because we don't know what's definitely going to happen. We're not kind of predicting the market. We're trading what the probabilities are on certain scenarios. I mean, after you've been trading, I'm sure you guys have been trading for a long time. After you've traded over 10 years, I've been trading over 15, then you've seen almost every single thing a market can do. So it's just like repeating itself again and again. It's not exactly the same market, but the market's cycles repeat.
Yeah, that's for sure. How about let's go over a few different ones. Gold, obviously having some trouble getting through the 1975, 1900 area. Does it ultimately get through it in 2021?
So gold went to kind of highs. Which was in in August. Yeah. So we called the gold trade that kind of we started on in our trading room was around September. I think it was like October 2018, and then there was another entry on it in May 2019, and then again at the beginning of this year, then is the beginning of January, and the thing it ratted up to 2089 pretty much, and then we kind of pulled back, and we also called that as well on the move down. We said down to 1800 and exactly where it went and then bounced to the upside. So gold's a bit kind of messy at the moment because we're in a demand zone on the monthly chart. We're no longer in an uptrend, the way I define uptrend. And if we look at the weekly chart, we've bounced from a demand, but it looks like we may want to pull back a bit more and go down. So
do you ever look at the long-term moving averages? Because I like to look at those. The 1 year came in at 1775 and obviously we held that, but the 2 and the 3 year are substantially lower. And are you thinking if we take out 1776, people are going to be a little shocked that we may go down and test the longer term average?
I don't look at moving averages at all. I just look at price and levels. I stopped using moving averages a long time ago now. It was funny. I mean, I was like probably like everyone else out there. We used to have charts with all sorts of indicators on and in the early days when I was trying to figure this stuff out. And we had kind of a system, like if three indicators said up and two said down, we'll go with the three that said up, and obviously it went down. And then, you know, there was no kind of logic to how it would work. It didn't work, basically.
Right.
And we tried to kind of, and I worked with some very smart people, and we didn't get it working, anything working consistently. And, later on in my career, I decided, you know, forget about indicators. Let's just focus on price, because most indicators are derivative price.
Sure.
So if you read price, then you can see what's happening. You don't need to kind of look at it through tinted glasses or some other, you know, look at it directly and see what's happening. It's either going up, down, or staying the same, or moving sideways. Yeah. So with gold, I think probably it's looking like we're in for some sideways action now, sideways choppy.
Mm-hmm. And then next year, you think it could get back on its legs?
I'm not sure. We may have to, I would imagine it's going to consolidate a little bit into the new year as well. And we may pull back if we go below, like I think it's around, let's have a look here on the chart, around 1670 area. It's about 1670. Well, there's a couple of levels. Look on the weekly chart around 1760 area. If it goes below there, then we may pull back a bit more. But if I'm looking on the monthly chart, we don't hold below 1671.70, call it 1670, then we're going to drop down probably around to the 1500s again.
Which will shock a lot of people.
And then potentially all the way down, we could go down to 1300 as well. I mean, there's a possibility. And sometimes when you get those big moves that go to the upside and they start to move down, they go all the way back down again.
Yeah, because like all these people have bought, they're going to want to come out.
Yeah, and just like we saw with the pound, that's just a small example of that in a smaller time frame of all the way up and then all the way back down. When you get those moves that kind of take off, and if you understand the psychology of it, exactly what you said, there's people that bought at the top that start it going down because as it starts to go down more, they need to get out. And then as it goes down more and more, the people that were above where prices need to get out. So there's a selling pressure, and there's a big kind of there's a lot of more supply at those price levels, and there's demand, so price just drops.
That's the dollar the dollar index is fairly crowded trade on the negative side right now. Is it possible the dollar index could surprise people by actually rallying out of here? Because obviously positioning and sentiment is very negative on the dollar.
Okay, so the dollar index is very interesting. It's got some more downside. We said downside to around the 90 area. I'm looking at the cash at the moment, the dollar index cash. And again, the move started in May, really, when you really knew it's going down. And then we had a little bit of a rally in September and kind of October, but it was a move that you wanted to sell, not to buy. Yeah, you could buy it on the short term. Yeah, we had a month up, but it didn't break over the 95 area. I'm calling it the 95 area. So it was back down to the downside. Again, there's more downside, but we've got certain levels of demand like what we had today. Sometimes when you get extended moves to the downside, they snap back. And we have an example of that today. Mm-hmm. When we have an extended move that breaks down below a support, a demand area, you sometimes get a snapback. And the reason for that is because you're catching people shorting after an extended move below an area, thinking it's going to keep going down. So that the market snaps back to wipe them all out, basically. And could it? It's still bearish on the daily and the weekly and the monthly chart. And we got kind of intraday bullishness today, but it's still bearish for the time being. So could we get a surprise and we go up? If we get above, if we go above 95, I'm looking at the level, maybe even let's go like this, above 94.30, we start to look bullish again on the monthly chart.
And that would surprise many people too.
Yeah. Anything, I don't kind of try and guess what the market's going to do. I just trade what it's doing.
And don't fight it with different sentiment. Like I say, when the stock market is down and everyone's got negative sentiment, you can't just go with that. You've got to go where the prices are going. Once it makes a turn, doesn't matter how many people are unemployed. Doesn't matter how many restaurants are closed. You got to follow the numbers or else you're going to miss a lot of the move.
It's true. I mean, there was a trader on the trading floor where I used to work. I worked at a fund. This was probably about 14 years ago.
Yeah.
And one of the guys on the floor used to average in, and it worked for him many times with different, you know, stocks, whatever. It went against him, so he just bought more. And it worked all the years. He made like millions of dollars trading like that. Mm-hmm. But the problem was, it's a flawed way of trading because you don't have your risk management. You know, you're taking massive amount of risk on a trade, for example. And there's the one trade that he did it on, the one stock he actually did that on, never came back. And that was Lehman Brothers, if you remember. Lehman Brothers went to zero.
Sure.
So he was averaging into Lehman Brothers because that's what always worked. So that's an example of like a flawed strategy. It only takes one time to wipe you out, and it wiped out. It lost over $1 million on that, and it wiped him out.
Yeah.
So don't
do that. Sam, over to you. A little bit of an idea on how you think the year is going to close out, and what are you thinking next year brings for things like the S&P and the NASDAQ? Because, you know, there could be a tug of war between tech and value, huh?
Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, looking at where we are, seasonality-wise, I think that the stock market will probably finish the year off on a high. Maybe not the type of gains that we saw in recent months, but I am expecting the market to rally into the end of the year, like which oftentimes happen around this time. Next year, it's a little bit more uncertain, given how investors may react to the Biden presidency and issues with maybe another wave of lockdowns initially. Overall, though, again, I see the narrative as being bullish, given the fact that the Federal Reserve, they're just saying this is don't fight the Fed, and the Fed you provide ridiculous backstop to the market. I just see things moving in that direction. So if I had to choose, I would say that the outlook remains on the bullish side heading into 2021. But there are risks, of course, and one I would look for is how the markets react to the new administration and how the vaccine plays out and how the economy gets back on its feet or not as we head into Q1 and Q2.
Yeah, I mean, it just people are looking right now, it seems like, that the turnaround time between vaccine and normalcy is going to be very fast. And, people who live in a heavy winter area know very well that the cases have a pretty good chance of going up because of the fact that this is flu season to begin with.
Yeah, I expect the cases to really hit peak again probably in January, maybe even into February. So that's definitely going to be a factor.
Yeah. And, again, though, it could be a binary thing where people just forget about anything short term and are just focused to the second half of 2021, where they believe earnings will jump dramatically to make the valuations make sense. And maybe valuations will stay high because of negative interest rates. And ergo, when you compare the valuations to negative interest rates, maybe they're not as rich as people think. So there's a lot of different dynamics going on out there. As we're coming to the top of the hour here, Simon, do you have any specific offers that you'd like to extend and make sure that people know how to get a hold of you?
You can. One thing you should do, first and foremost, is you can go to my website. It's tradesmartforex.com with the number 4. You can type it into the room. You did. Thanks a lot. And go and you'll see, and just put your, if you put your email and name in there, you'll get access to a short video which will teach you how to go about developing a strategy. I think, let me just double check. That's what it was. Yeah, how to build a profitable trading strategy in 15 minutes. So it'll give you a kind of 15-minute video of what you need to do, how to go about doing that. And again, what I would suggest for everyone who's new to trading is firstly, learn how to read the market and then develop for yourself your own trading strategy. Yeah, it doesn't have to be complicated. You want to keep it as simple as possible. What I'd like to do also is we had an offer that I usually do on presentations, and I'm going to extend it here as well. And the offer is, you see underneath, it's if you go to tradesmartforex.com/promo, you can get access to a training, which is the first part of how to read the market professionally. The first session is a 5-session course. And the first session is how to read the trend, which is what I covered part of this here, is understanding how to read the trend using pivot analysis alone and the candlesticks to know exactly when a trend begins and ends. And that's super valuable when you want, to be able to read the trend. It's one of the basics, fundamentals of reading any market. So you can get not only access to that training, you can also come into our trading room with that, 1 month for free, basically, in our live trading room. So come and see us in action. You'll see us, the trades that we called out today, the pound trade that I mentioned here. You can go and watch the recording of that immediately if you take action now, or as soon as you watch, if you're watching the recording, you can go and watch that video. We record every session, so you can go and learn it. We have people that can't even make the live session, but they watch the recording and they use that to help them trade the rest of the day, which is amazing. We have one guy who's making around $1,000 a day just by watching and learning what we're doing and then taking that to his own trading. So again, there's people that come live and there's people that watch the recordings and use it to learn primarily, to learn how you can do it yourself. That's the biggest advice I'll give to anyone who's starting out in trading. You need to become your own trader and stand on your own 2 feet and not rely on anyone else. But you need to learn how to do that first. Okay. There's no gurus out there. There's no one special who knows something better than anyone else. What works for you may not work for someone else and vice versa. And I'll just give you an analogy, which was kind of interesting. When I was learning to trade, we're trading professionally, and there was a group of people following following a market maker. And the market maker was calling out, you know, buy here, buy there, sell here, you know, start taking out, you know, we used to get into the market, buy and sell, and then work ourselves out of the position for profit, no matter what the market was doing. Yeah? So that if you talk about 20 traders doing this and 20 different results, much the same as if you have a master chef or baker and everyone's following the same instructions, but you'll get 20 different cakes coming out at the end of the day. Yeah. They're not going to look the same. Yeah.
Right.
So even if you're doing the same thing, the results aren't going to be the same. So what you need to do, and what everyone who's every trader in this industry who's mastered it has found themselves, has found something that works for themselves and become very good at it. So I would say, you know, that's what you need to do. Learn the fundamentals of reading a market. If you want to become a trader based on technicals, learn how to read the market, learn how to read the trend, number one. Yeah. And from there, start to watch the market and develop yourself as a trader, understand what you're seeing, and then develop yourself a strategy. You will see something happening maybe again and again. Try and build a strategy around that. And again, there's a lot of things that go into that. I can't go into it all now. Come and join our trading room. We'll go into, you know, some of those details, and it's in the wider training, but get a taste of what it is. And you can, I also have a YouTube channel. You can go and watch, and there's a lot of free videos there, and you can get an understanding of this, if this is for you. If it is, we'll be very happy to, you know, have you join our trading room and go through the training.
That's great. Yep.
It's a lot.
Well, yeah, it is a lot. Hey, Sam, very briefly, if you could just give us a little background on how people can get a hold of you. And if you had any special offers, this is a great time to extend it.
Sure. Well, thanks so much for having me on again, guys. If anyone wants to learn more about the volatility markets and how to trade volatility as an asset alongside other markets in a, you know, concise weekly options trading program, you can visit tradinggods.net. And we have a retirement day trader program offer for anyone who wants to join us. And we look forward to hearing from you.
Okay. Sounds great, you guys. Thanks a lot for being here, Simon and Sam. For optionprofessor.com, just go to the website, OPTION, professor, PROFESSOR.com. Put your email in, and every week we'll give you a market update on everything from the stock market, bonds, gold, oil, and some of the soft things that are going on, like soybeans and coffee, which is a big one today. Anyway, back to David, and thanks a lot for being here, guys. We'll talk soon, okay?
Thanks.
All right. Thanks, guys. Yeah, lots of good info covered today. So just a quick reminder for everyone, be sure to subscribe to Timing Research on YouTube, as well as your favorite podcast directory or app. And you can also go to timingresearch.com to get access to any of the past reports or shows or presentations from the big events that we do, and as well as the recording of this show as soon as I can get it posted within the next hour or so. So that's at timingresearch.com. And also just want to thank my guests for today again. Simon Klein of TradeSmartForex.com. Great to have you back on the show. And Sam Borgi of TradingGods.net. Good to have you here too again, 2 weeks in a row. Mm-hmm. So Jim, the Option Professor of OptionProfessor.com. So thanks, everyone.
Thanks, David.
Thanks, David.
Thanks, guys. Thank you.